Look at that, you lot. Potter fought. He fought it, and he damn near beat it. We'll try that again, Potter, and the rest of you, pay attention. Watch his eyes. That's where you see it. Very good, Potter. Very good indeed. They'll have trouble controlling you.
The way he talks, Harry muttered, as he hobbled out of the Defence Against the Dark Arts class an hour later. Moody had insisted on putting Harry through his paces 4 times in a row until Harry could throw the curse off entirely. You'd think we were all going to be attacked any second. "Yeah, I know," said Ron, who was skipping on every alternate step. He had had much more difficulty with the curse than Harry, though Moody assured him the effects would have worn off by lunchtime. Talk about paranoid. Ron glanced nervously over his shoulder to check that Moody was definitely out of earshot, and went on. No wonder they were glad to get shot of him at the Ministry. Did you hear him telling Seamus what he did to that witch who shouted boo behind him on April Fool's Day? And when are we supposed to read up on resisting the Imperious Curse with everything else we've got to do? All the fourth years had noticed a definite increase in the amount of work they were required to do this term. Professor McGonagall explained why, when the class gave a particularly loud groan at the amount of transfiguration homework she had set. "You are now entering a most important phase of your magical education," she told them, her eyes glinting dangerously behind her square spectacles. "Your ordinary wizarding levels are drawing closer." "We don't take OWLs till 5th year," said Dean Thomas indignantly. "Maybe not, Thomas, but believe me, you'll need all the preparation you can get. Miss Granger remains the only person in this class who has managed to turn a hedgehog into a satisfactory pincushion. I might remind you that your pincushion, Thomas, still curls up in fright if anyone approaches it with a pin."
Hermione, who had turned rather pink again, seemed to be trying not to look too pleased with herself. Harry and Ron were deeply amused when Professor Trelawney told them that they had received top marks for their homework in their next divination class. She read out large portions of their predictions, commending them for their unflinching acceptance of the horrors in store for them. But they were less amused when she asked them to do the same thing for the month after next. Both of them were running out of ideas for catastrophes. Meanwhile, Professor Binns, the ghost who taught history of magic, had them writing weekly essays on the goblin rebellions of the 18th century. Professor Snape was forcing them to research antidotes. They took this seriously, as he had hinted that he might be poisoning one of them before Christmas to see if their antidote worked. Professor Flitwick had asked them to read 3 extra books in preparation for their lesson on summoning charms. Even Hagrid was adding to their workload. The blast-ended scroots were growing at a remarkable pace, given that nobody had yet discovered what they ate. Hagrid was delighted, and, as part of their project, suggested that they come down to his hut on alternate evenings to observe the scroots and make notes on their extraordinary behaviour.
"I will not," said Draco Malfoy flatly, when Hagrid had proposed this, with the air of Father Christmas pulling an extra-large toy out of his sack. "I see enough of these foul things during lessons, thanks." Hagrid's smile faded from his face. "You'll do what you're told," he growled, "or I'll be taking a leaf out of Professor Moody's book. I hear you made a good ferret, Malfoy."
The Gryffindors roared with laughter. Malfoy flushed with anger, but apparently the memory of Moody's punishment was still sufficiently painful to stop him retorting. Harry, Ron, and Hermione returned to the castle at the end of the lesson in high spirits. Seeing Hagrid put down Malfoy was particularly satisfying, especially because Malfoy had done his very best to get Hagrid sacked the previous year. When they arrived in the entrance hall, they found themselves unable to proceed, owing to the large crowd of students congregated there, all milling around a large sign which had been erected at the foot of the marble staircase. Ron, the tallest of the three, stood on tiptoe to see over the heads in front of them and read the sign aloud to the other two. "Tri-Wizard Tournament. The delegations from Beauxbatons and Durmstrang will be arriving at 6 o'clock on Friday, 30th of October. Lessons will end 30 minutes early."
"Brilliant," said Harry. "It's potions lasting on Friday. Snape won't have time to poison us all."
students will return their bags and books to their dormitories and assemble in front of the castle to greet our guests before the welcoming feast."
"Only a week away,"
said Ernie Macmillan of Hufflepuff, emerging from the crowds, his eyes gleaming.
"I wonder if Cedric knows. Think I'll go and tell him."
"Cedric?" said Ron blankly, as Ernie hurried off.
"Diggory," said Harry. "He must be entering the tournament."
"That idiot, Hogwarts champion,"
said Ron, as they pushed their way through the chattering crowd towards the staircase.
"He's not an idiot. You just don't like him because he beat Gryffindor at Quidditch," said Hermione. "I've heard he's a really good student, and he's a prefect."
She spoke as though this settled the matter.
"You only like him because he's handsome," said Ron scathingly.
"Excuse me, I don't like people just because they're handsome," said Hermione indignantly.
Ron gave a loud, false cough, which sounded oddly like
Lockhart.
The appearance of the sign in the entrance hall had a marked effect upon the inhabitants of the castle. During the following week there seemed to be only one topic of conversation, no matter where Harry went: the Tri-Wizard Tournament. Rumours were flying from student to student like highly contagious germs. Who was going to try for Hogwarts champion? What the tournament would involve? How the students from Beauxbatons and Durmstrang differed from themselves? Harry noticed, too, that the castle seemed to be undergoing an extra thorough cleaning. Several grimy portraits had been scrubbed, much to the displeasure of their subjects, who sat huddled in their frames, muttering darkly and wincing as they felt their raw pink faces. The suits of armour were suddenly gleaming and moving without squeaking, and Argus Filch, the caretaker, was behaving so ferociously to any student who forgot to wipe their shoes that he terrified a pair of first-year girls into hysterics. Other members of staff seemed oddly tense, too.
"Longbottom, kindly do not reveal that you can't even perform a simple switching spell in front of anyone from Durmstrang,"
Professor McGonagall barked at the end of one particularly difficult lesson, during which Neville had accidentally transplanted his own ears onto a cactus.